From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
Hey everybody, this is Aaron, your Rebels Reactions host. I just wanted to take a moment to apologize for how long it has taken for some of these episodes to be released. If you have read my blog there on Coffee with Kenobi, you know over the past month I've been dealing with the loss of a good friend who passed away unexpectedly, and it hit a little too close to home. I appreciate those of you who did know your outpouring of support. It has meant a great deal to me. Thank you to Dan and Corey for giving me the latitude to work through this time of self-examination, really, and for everything that they have done and for us and for me. It has been a tremendous help getting through this. I promise I'll be cranking out some new episodes. We got a tremendous rest of the season. I will get everything out for you as fast as I can. Some great discussions, great topics, but I at least wanted to say thank you to each and every one of you and for your support. And again, I'm sorry for how long it's taken, but it is hopefully well worth the wait for you guys. Have a great time enjoying this episode.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace. Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi takes an in-depth look at Star Wars Rebels. Today we're talking about The Honorable Ones, a great episode with a focus on Zeb and a focus on Agent Kallus, which we haven't seen a lot of recently. Joining us for tonight's discussion, two very good friends of mine. I'm happy to join me tonight. I have Zach Moore and Rachel Moore from Good Morning Empire. How are y'all today?
We are wonderful, Aaron.
Amazing.
How are you?
I'm doing great. Oh, I'm so happy y'all were able to join me this week from getting to know y'all, I know y'all like Zeb as much as I do. So,
Oh yeah, yep.
So he's a favorite. We've gotten to meet Steve a couple of times. And he's just the coolest.
Absolutely, he is. He's hysterical to talk to. I love him. Full of energy, full of vibrato, and he comes across great in this episode.
Yes.
Because he pays a lot of attention on Zeb. We see a lot of – this season has shown a lot of growth for a lot of our characters, a lot of our stars, and a lot of our heroes. We've seen a lot of in-depth growth for each individual this year, except for maybe Chopper. Chopper doesn't need much growth when he's a little droid, but you know, I'm sure his day's coming. But Zeb has done a lot in the last few episodes and doesn't slack off in this one. And we start off in this episode with the ghost approaching
planet that we are all familiar with. If you've seen Attack of the Clones, you know it very well. The planet of Geonosis.
Yes.
As a planet we haven't seen in a long time.
It's been a while. It's been a while. I felt like I needed to, you know, send out a welcoming committee for Geonosis when I saw it.
Yep.
Absolutely. It was one of those unique experiences. When they said it was Geonosis, I was pretty excited. I mean, there was a lot of debris and stuff around the planet, and they were talking about about construction yards being there, and they were there to investigate what possibly could have been built. And of course, if you have read the book Tarkin, you know what was being built there.
I will be perfectly honest with you, Aaron. I tried to read the book Tarkin, and it was a little bit more on the sleepy side than some of the other new canon books. I enjoyed it, and I plan to finish it, but once I was reading it, and then Dark Disciple came out, and then that kind of stole my attention for a little while. So,
well, that I can understand.
Yes.
That I can understand. Well, of course, we know they are building, that is one of the locations where they were building the Death Star at one point. Of course, in the movie, you know, the Geonosians have the plans for the Death Star, which they're building under construction. Well, they haven't started building yet at the end of Attack of the Clones, but they got the plans. Of course, we see it under construction at the end of Revenge of the Sith.
One of the most filling scenes in the movie.
Exactly. And if we find out in the book, which Tarkin, of course, that he's overseeing, that Governor Tarkin's overseeing the construction of the Death Star. And he's got several different bases it's being constructed at, but the primary base is at Geonosis. And we find out in the opening scenes here of this episode that apparently Geonosis has been abandoned. There's abandoned workstations. There's a lot of debris in orbit. And as they approach the planet and they're doing the scans for life forms, because Rex makes a comment, he knows the bugs don't like visitors. And Rex would know best.
He would.
He would. So they go, they do their scans, and it winds up, there's no life on Geonosis anymore. Which is kind of surprising. It was a very heavily populated planet with the Geonosian species that were all over the place. A lot of them living underground, of course, as we saw in the movie. But very strange to have the entire planet abandoned, no life on it.
It's almost as if something terrible happened.
Yes.
Almost.
Almost. Like there was a great calling out and just a great silence. But it brings you to that, you begin questioning why would they have done that? Not why did they do that, but what actually happened to the people of Geonosis right off the bat is a question you start answering or asking, not answering.
Which, interestingly enough, Agent Callus didn't even know the answer to.
Yeah, so
we'll get to it later. So
absolutely, and he divulges that later on. He doesn't even know, but it's one of those situations where, what with the events that occurred in Tarkin. Because if I know you didn't finish it, but spoiler alert: if you haven't read Tarkin, read it. but you're about to get a little spoiled.
I mean, I deserve it. It's the 6 month rule has passed.
Well, okay, that works. I'll still proceed it with the spoiler alert. The base gets attacked by rebels. The Geonosis base does get attacked. So it would make sense at that point they would relocate the construction field. At that point, could that be the connection with this, where they find that the construction field's there and the rebels are going to investigate further? Maybe. We don't know. But, of course, our heroes approach one of the construction modules and board it to look around, see what's going on. And like any good Rebels episode, it's a trap! It felt appropriate. I'm sorry.
It did. No, it did.
So we have a trap of Kallus, and stormtroopers are running everywhere. And a little black astromech comes wheeling out and starts closing all the blast doors, trapping our heroes inside the construction module. While Hera, Rex, and Chopper are still on board the Ghost. Fortunately, Chopper is able to take on an astromech and win.
That might be as many emotional and as many really deep, insightful moments as there were in this episode. The moment where you just see a slap fight between two astromechs might be my favorite moment in the episode.
I promise that was absolutely my favorite through the whole thing. I got a huge kick out of that because they're just bumping each other. And finally you hear Ezra yell at him, "Hurry up, Chop. Take him, get him, Chop." And all of a sudden, finally, he goes through, and what happens? He bumps him out. he shocks him up, drops those, electrocutes him, and he falls over, and he opens up the door so our heroes can finally get away. And Ezra congratulates him. Kanan, criticizing him for taking so much time. "About time, Chopper." So they take off to escape, but unfortunately, Zeb is cut off from the rest of the group because as soon as he saw Kallus, he engages his mortal enemy. We know from past episodes that Kallus and Zeb have a unique relationship.
Nemesis.
Yes, very much nemesis for him. And
like they would get extra points on Battlefront for killing each other.
Yeah.
One more time.
They would get extra points on Battlefront for killing each other. Like, do you play Battlefront?
I have not yet been able to play.
Okay.
It's amazing. Yeah, if you have a nemesis in the game, you just get like a plus 50 points whenever you kill them. It's just somebody that you frequently kill or they kill you.
Tell you what, Aaron. I'll finish Tarkin, you play Battlefront, and then we'll do a different show about that sometime.
There you go.
Yeah.
You got it.
Just catch up.
We'll do. We'll each do our homework and we'll get it done. So yes, they are definitely nemesis, and of course Zeb is never going to let a chance for Kallus to get away. Because as we know from previous episodes, he has a lot of hatred for Kallus and his role in the fall of the Lasat homeworld.
Yes.
And of course that plays out dramatically through this episode as our heroes are escaping and Zeb is fighting. They're trying to fall back, and obviously we're seeing a lot of concern from Ezra for his friend Zeb. Constantly calling out, "Where are you? We're leaving. Get back here." And Zeb is caught off. He knows he's not going to make it. So he's like, "I'll find another way out. Just go." And he's like, "I'll take an escape pod." He gets in the escape pod after beating up a whole bunch of stormtroopers with one swing of his battle rifle, and gets in the escape pod, goes to launch it, and Kallus jumps in behind him, and they continue their fight inside the escape pod as it launches.
And as it crashes.
Exactly, because they get thrown into each other into the controls, and the escape pod crashes while the Ghost is fighting for its survival against TIE fighters and walkers, because there's walkers on the station now. You think they would have detected those and scanning?
Yeah.
One would assume, but hey, that would make it a lot easier and a lot less of a plot point. So.
Very good. Yep, that is true. Very true. So we continue on through the fight. Hera does some brilliant maneuvering, flying around, getting rid of the TIE fighters and destroying the walkers to where they're safe for the time being and they can begin their search for Zeb. And of course, we see Chopper's smart aleckness come back through again as Ezra's like, "Did you track his escape pod?" And we get Chopper tweeting chirping something back. And Ezra looks at him and goes, "Yes, of course we want him back. Now find him." So,
that, going back, like taking that into consideration, the what we were talking about a minute ago with the Ezra and Zeb thing, that's one of the more subtle emotional things that we've gotten. Because always when we see the relationship between Ezra and Zeb, it's always a bickery sort of older, younger sibling kind of punching each other, peeing contest kind of things. But
exactly.
Yeah, for lack of a better term. But in this, it's actually, you know, it's a really nice moment because Ezra is genuinely concerned about the well-being of his friend. So that was a really unsung and beautiful moment for me.
They did a great job interpreting that friendship and everything as well. And it really emotional time for them too, because you can, I mean, the worry is flat out there.
Yeah.
And this is, they begin that search, and obviously they have a lot to search through because they're believing he crashed on Geonosis, when in all reality, because they damaged the escape pod in the fight, our hero and our nemesis have crashed on one of the moons called Bahrain. Of course, this winds up being an ice planet. Riddle me this. How does a planet of a desert planet, where obviously it's extremely hot, all desert, how does it have a moon made of ice?
Exactly.
You know what? We're going to write Neil Tyson and we're going to be like, "Hey, we need you to be like a science person on the next Star Wars, like on the next season of Star Wars Rebels, because these guys just, you know, they're missing some stuff."
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I don't mind.
I can hear Pablo's answer to this, because he has said it before when somebody else asks other types of questions concerning the last Zeb focused episode we had. Physics in the Star Wars world may not work the same as it does in our universe.
Yeah, exactly.
So I can hear his answer already replaying in my head. So I won't even ask him that one next time. But so they crash on Bahrain, and they don't even hit. They hit the surface. They go straight through the surface and wind up in a cavern underground, which is very nice. Very nice weather, you know, freezing cold and ice everywhere. And in the crash, we find out that Agent Kallus, when you see it from the impact as he grabs his legs and screams, he gets injured. He has hurt his leg. Essentially, you get the impression his leg is broken in that crash.
And, did you hear the noise? Because I don't think Rachel heard the noise, but I heard a very distinct crack of the leg.
I just heard him scream, and it just scared me. But
I never went back and really listened to see what it was, but I did hear something right as they right at that impact.
Yeah.
As right before he screamed. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if that's what that was, because with the detail they put in these shows.
Yeah.
So we
got, made me squirm.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I just said it made me squirm.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I've hurt my knee before. I've hurt my leg. I've can't tell you how many times I messed my knee up. So I understand that shot of pain that he got there. You're almost, yes, Kallus is hurt. But we find out later, not necessarily a good thing, because the cave they're in isn't necessarily uninhabited, let's say.
They're crashing a party, so to speak.
Oh, exactly, they are. But Zeb salvages what he can from the escape pod, gets the emergency kit, he gets Kallus out, who of course is not thrilled to be trapped on a planet with Zeb, much less be kind of almost like a prisoner, because Zeb is the only one that's able to get the weapons. And Zeb, of course, is like, you know, it'd be so easy to kill you, but I'd rather let you heal first than kill you.
So that was great, Zeb boys.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm not coming for your job, Steve, I promise. But Zeb, this is where we start seeing a very unique not necessarily relationship, but a unique bond formed between Callus and Zeb through the remainder of this episode, because now they're trapped and they now have to depend on each other for survival. And they're not sure who's going to rescue them because the transponder's damaged, and it normally would just transmit directly to the Empire, but Zeb reprograms it to just do a general broadcast to protect everybody, or to contact anybody who can detect it. So whether it be the Imperials, whether it be the Ghost, or passing pirates, we don't know. Hondo Onaka here. You never know. You never know who's going to show up in Star Wars. Yep. But we go through and we start talking. They start discussing, going back and forth, almost, you know, having a try to one up each other contest throughout the rest of this episode for the most part. Trying to figure out, do one another in their motives and their talking and throughout everything. And they're talking about the heater, they're talking that winds up freezing over. Then they find a meteorite, which apparently had crashed on the planet, which is provides them light and warmth. Lucky find for them. Trying to figure out where it came from, if they were in a sealed cave underground, but hey, you know.
Once again, physics just doesn't matter in the Star Wars universe. It's a story. It's for emotion.
Exactly. Let's forget the physics part of it.
Yeah.
Let's forget the physics part of it and just proceed with the Star Wars part of it. So, of course, we get Zeb, of course, helping Callus by, you know, splinting his leg because obviously it's hurt. He uses the staff that he had gotten from, or that Callus had, the Lasat staff, for the splint. And that's when we find out the real story of how Agent Callus came into possession of that staff.
Yes.
Which is, I thought, was a very interesting story because it gave more insight into Lasat culture. Hi, puppy.
Sorry about that.
Oh, you're good. No worries. We like all kinds of guest stars on Rebels.
Oh.
So Zeb, of course, is now taking care of Agent Callus, and he's got the battle rifle, and he's using that, or Agent Callus's battle rifle, and he's using that to splint his leg. And this is when we get an interesting story as to how Callus actually obtained that weapon.
Yes.
It was, and it's not necessarily the way you think. He said he took it off of a dead Lasat Honor Guard member and, as a souvenir. And he comes out, in this episode, he admits that that's not necessarily how he got it. It wasn't a souvenir. It was the Lasat he fought was a member of the Honor Guard, who we found out a couple episodes ago would have been under the command of Zeb. And the Honor Guard member fought valiantly. They fought well, but in the end, Callus beat him. And in his last dying breaths, he gave his weapon to the man who defeated him, which was Callus. And when Zeb realized that, he understood. He called it the Boshan Kuron, which apparently is what the Lasat called that when they know they're beaten, surrendering their weapon to the stronger person who did beat them.
And how great is it that Zeb used the staff of the Lasat that Callus beat in order to support Callus's broken leg? So it's just like there are two Lasat supporting, like basically two Lasat keeping him alive.
Exactly. And they do, and it's, if it wasn't for that weapon, you know, would they have ever escaped at that point?
Exactly.
So they decide they're going to, they have to get out. So Zeb, once he gets him bandaged up, goes to try to make his escape and tries to crawl out up the wall, but with no avail. He just keeps falling down, and Callus keeps laughing at him, telling him not to do it that way. You're going to get hurt. And Zeb gets frustrated after his last fall, turns, looks at him, and goes, "How about I break some more bones of yours?" And next thing you know, there's this big roar, and this is where we get a glimpse of Callus's and Zeb's roommates, the Bonzami. creature. That's what they call him, the Bonzami, according to StarWars.com, is what those things are called, as it comes out and decides it wants to take a bite of Zeb.
Just a bite, just a taste.
Just a bite, you know. Sometimes Lasat tastes like chicken. Yeah. So they, of course, it gets a fight ensues between Kallus and Zeb. They are both able to fight him off to where they survive and are able to win and live to fight another day. And they don't want to, of course, be dead. So they need to escape and get somewhere where they can get the frequency, the homing beacon to get tracked. So they decide to work together to work on their way out. And what's interesting through this whole thing is we see, even though they're both trying to outdo each other, they're both, it's a battle of strength between the two of them. At the beginning, then we go into a battle of who's better. I did this. Oh, I can do this. Well, they're trying to outdo each other. They get into very much of this battle of wits of trying to work together and while trying to help each other at the same point, not one really wants to give in to one another per se,
right?
And show each other's of any weakness at that point. Which really complicates this relationship because we have two very strong warriors who are now having to work together just to survive.
And we've got two of anyone working together, they're going to find vulnerability in each other.
Exactly. And we see that begin to explore as they go through the episode. They're beginning to find each other's vulnerabilities. They decide to work together to escape, so they decide to climb up the wall instead of, and do the escape. But Kallus suggests, of course, we use the pillar instead to climb up, because the pillar, of course, supports everything else, including the cave. Why wouldn't it be able to support the rest of them? And, of course, Zeb is like, you know, if this doesn't work, I'm going to feed you to those creatures.
You're killing me with the Zeb impression. Oh, it's the best.
Yes, yeah, so the few people I will not try to impersonate, Zeb is one of the few I will. Don't know why, it just comes naturally. And it sounds so much better because I'm recovering from losing my voice. So it sounds so much gruffer when I do it. So we got them trying to escape. They're trying to climb up the wall to escape. And we find out in their discussion before they try to escape, when they're kind of getting vulnerable with each other, and Kallus reveals his first encounter with Alasat on his very first mission. And this really jumped out to me because he's talking about his first mission with his first group of men, his first unit, to deal with the uprising on Onderon. Now, who remembers Onderon from the Clone Wars?
Oh, I remember Onderon from the Clone Wars. Oh, but yeah. Why don't you tell me more about it, Aaron?
Oh, yes. We have Onderon from the Clone Wars. So we have Onderon, where Kallus was initially sent to fight against Saw Gerrera, who we also know from the Clone Wars. That's who, of course, Anakin Skywalker, or not, more of Ahsoka Tano, really, who helped set up that rebellion on Onderon and get that going, because the Republic didn't have the troops to send in to take Onderon from the Separatists, but they did go in and form an underground to fight the Separatists. We had Saw Gerrera and, of course, his sister Stella, who was a focus of that episode, of those episodes, who took charge and became the leaders of that rebellion.
What season was that in?
That was in season 4 or 5.
I thought it was in one of the later, like mid to later seasons.
Yeah, I want to say that was season 5. Let me just double check that.
That was a good series.
Oh, it was yes. Yeah, so if you've never watched The Clone Wars, you people don't know what you're missing. Go back and watch it. you will love, if you love Rebels, you will love the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars really laid the groundwork for everything we're seeing now in Rebels.
Like, Rebels can be enjoyed as a standalone series, but the more that I watch of it and the more that I recall Clone Wars, the more they walk with totally interlocked fingers. Mm-hmm. It's amazing how much they coexist and how symbiont they are with each other. So
exactly. And for the record, that was season 5.
Okay.
That was actually the first arc of season 5, because the initial episode was the revival episode where they brought back Darth Maul. Then the next three episodes, actually 4 episodes, were the Onderon arc, which was a phenomenal arc in and of itself, which we see a lot of growth in Ahsoka in. But that's a different podcast at another time, which I believe Dan and Corey did on A Cup of Clone Wars a while ago, a long time ago. So, but we find out that this uprising on Onderon is where Kallus really got his first interaction with the Lestat, because after his unit was really beaten by this uprising group, Kallus was injured right in the first part of the battle and just was unable to move, lying there. Through the smoke and fire, he sees a Lestat come walking through and just start literally killing the wounded and beating and killing every Imperial left that was alive. But for some reason left Kallus alone. And Kallus doesn't understand why that would have happened. But he knows that's where his first impression of the Lestat came from. And Zeb makes a very interesting statement at this point, where it's saying, don't judge all of Lestat based on one person's actions.
To which Kallus says,
does it also apply to the Imperials?
Which was just a chilling moment. And that entire story was introduced in such an interesting way, because the first time I watched it, when Kallus said the line, "We all have things that we'll never forget."
Exactly.
I was like, that cut me to the bone. And then he started telling the story, and I was like, I almost wish they had left that open-ended and not told the story until he got into the story and explained what happened. Because I was like, you know, sometimes less is more. But once he finally, like, once he got to the gut of that story, it was just such a chilling story, and so important, because we have to realize that these shows aren't just for us. They're for kids of all ages, so to speak. And so that's teaching empathy in one of the deepest of ways that you possibly can, which is learn how to empathize with your enemy.
Exactly. And that's what they were focusing on, trying to show in that story time, because that really took these two to a different level at that point. A different level of understanding, because the only thing Zeb knew was the Empire who destroyed his homeworld, whereas when it came to Kallus, his impressions of Lestat are the ruthless man who came through and destroyed his unit, even though they were injured and unable to fight. So it definitely shows how one person's outlook can be disrupted by one person, by one individual's actions. It can reflect on an entire people.
Such a beautiful.
Hey, it's Dan Z
and Corey Club
from Coffee with Kenobi, and we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. Has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes. You've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina. Trade with your friends and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants, It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
So we wind up going up the pillar as they're trying to climb. And as they're trying to escape and climb up, the creatures come back. And they're trying to have a bite of not only Zeb, but, you know, a side of Callus to go with it. And, yeah, you got chicken and fries.
Yeah.
Zeb and Callus. So they're trying to make their escape. And as they're trying to climb and Zeb keeps slipping, he, of course, yells his famous favorite phrase, Karabas. And we get the best reaction from Callus in this. Because he asked the question that everybody has been asking.
Karabas, Karabas, what does that even mean?
Exactly. What does it mean? And Zeb doesn't answer his question. Exactly. Zeb is just basically means, all right, now it means you're heavier than I thought.
Because we all know what it really means.
Exactly.
We all know what it really means.
We all have it in our head, what we know it, what we want it to mean. Just leave it that way.
Yeah.
But we have a great interaction there. And then Zeb's like, I hope this works. Hope, hope. What do you mean, hope? And you see Zeb trigger a spike device on the battle rifle that's strapped to Callus's leg. We get a little spike that shoots out of it. Then he swings and just throws Callus across the cavern. It sticks him to the roof, hanging upside down. And you know his leg's hurting at that point because he yelps. He lets out that yelp that lets you know that he is absolutely terrified of what's happening and not quite sure what's going on. But because as he's hanging there and the more he swings around, the more the spike slips. And Zeb winds up jumping and landing on one of the creatures, which is ironic. If the creatures were tall enough for them to get out, I would have tried to use them originally. But hey, you know.
Once again.
You know, made for a shorter episode with less bonding. He just strapped Callus to something and wave him out front, you know. Like, here, rabbit. Like a little carrot in front of a horse. But hey, you know, that's how I would have gotten out. But so Zeb lands on top of the Bonzami, and he's up there right as Callus falls. And when Callus falls, Zeb catches him, swings him around, and tosses him right out of the roof of the cave. And so he's on the surface now in the blizzard that's pounding the surface. And he jumps up. Zeb jumps up and tries to pull himself out. And as he's pulling himself out, he looks up. And there's his worst nightmare. There is Callus with his own battle rifle pointed directly at his head. And Zeb just stands there, looks at him. You know, what else is Zeb to say?
Karabas.
Exactly. So you do that quite well. So we wind up seeing that scene. And of course, Callus doesn't shoot Zeb. He shoots past Zeb and shoots the creature that was about to eat Zeb as Zeb hung there. And then, of course, he extends his hand and pulls him out of the pit and saves his life.
Do you think that was because Callus knew somewhere deep within him that he couldn't survive there without Zeb, or from a genuine place of good? Do you think we had accessed that at this point in the episode?
I honestly think at this point in the episode, it was a combination of things, really. A lot of it probably has to do with honor at this point. We have two very lifelong warriors who have built their life on honor and doing what's right, or what they think is right in regards to what's happened. And they go through, and he knows he would not have made it that far without Zeb. The honorable thing to do would be to see it through to the end.
Yep. I agree completely.
And I think that's why we see him. Then it kill the or shoot the creature to scare it away, then extend his hand to retrieve Zeb from the pit. And they get out. He tells Zeb to activate the beacon because they are not going to last long on the surface because it's cold. And to which Zeb replies, "I'd rather be cold than be eaten." Which I can't say I blame him.
No, no.
Yeah, that'd definitely be my choice too.
I mean, I've been pretty cold a time or two, but I've never thought, you know what? I think I'd rather be eaten.
Exactly. Being eaten would have put a damper on things, don't you think?
Yeah.
It'd be a lot warmer.
It'd be a lot warmer, but you wouldn't have to worry about it after a while.
Yeah.
So he activates the beacon, and now it's just a matter of waiting to see who is going to show up first to the rescue. In the meantime, Callus and Zeb work their way over to a cave or an outcropping where they can get some shelter. They've got the meteorite with them, still trying to keep them as warm as they possibly can. And they get there, and they're waiting now for the ship. And this is where we hear more of an interaction with Callus at this point, because Callus looks at him and is like, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a massacre. And on Lestat, it wasn't supposed to be that way. And he said, I know I took credit for it, but it's not how it was supposed to have happened. Things were supposed to have turned out very differently. He knew the Empire wanted to make a statement, though. And things got out of hand. And almost like he was trying to apologize for what had happened.
Another example of when you get two people, no matter how much of nemesis they think they are, when you get them in a situation in which they depend on each other and there's a quiet moment, vulnerability is going to come through 100% of the always.
Exactly. And we see that happening throughout this this episode, especially for these two. They become very vulnerable because Zeb looks at him and is like, you know, I've put that behind me. That's in the past. I am just looking forward to what can I do, and moving on from there, and pretty much leave that unspoken forgiveness right there, which brings their relationship to a turning point at that, I believe, at this point, because not only have they worked together, but they've had to trust each other, and their trust has paid off. They're surviving, and they wind up what's funny is, and then as the scene continues, it cuts to the next, I guess, couple hours later, they had fallen asleep against each other, and they wake up hitting each other. They're leaning against each other's backs. They wake up, and they are edging. They're elbowing. They're hitting each other.
Bros.
Exactly, bros. Bro.
Get off me, bro. I didn't mean to kill your race, bro.
Exactly. You wasn't on you. You were on me. Have a tic-tac. So they hear the ship, of course, and Zeb gets up. They help him up, and they're going to find out who's finally showing up to rescue him. And as they round the corner outside the little outcropping where they're hiding, trying to stay warm, Callus looks up and goes, well, it looks like your fans found you. Looks like you'll be going home. And we turn around and see the ghost at that point. And Zeb offers him passage. He goes, We will treat you right. And Callus decides he'd rather take his chances on the Empire. And Zeb leaves him. After, though, he takes two steps, turns around, looks at him, gives him the Lestat salute, fist in hand, and the bend over kind of slight bow, to which Callus returns it. A real show of honor and of respect at this point between these two, as this episode has gone on.
Really great moment.
Definitely a great moment, because these two literally had a lot of hate toward each other. through both seasons, really. And Zeb takes off for the ghost. Everybody comes out. Zeb, we were worried about you. You're alive. We're so happy to see you. Except for Chopper. So it always comes back around to Chopper. They missed him, and they're so glad he was okay. They were worried. And Ezra's like, come on, let's go. It's cold out here. And Zeb looks at him like, cold? You've only been out here 2 minutes. And Ezra's, that's 2 minutes too long. So they go to board the ship.
To the normal Zeb-Ezra relationship, you know?
Exactly. It's not like Ezra's been worried about him the whole episode, which he has.
Right.
He's just not going to show it. So they board the ghost, and as before, as Zeb boards, he turns one more time and looks over to where he knows where Callus is, boards the ship, and they leave. He doesn't let him know Callus is there. He doesn't turn him in. I mean, he very easily could have said, hey, guys, Callus is over there. Let's take him. But he doesn't. He leaves him there.
Interesting that he didn't.
Exactly, because, I mean, that would have been a huge, huge catch for the rebellion at that point to have Agent Callus in custody.
I have a question for you, Aaron.
Sure.
Do you think that later in the season, because as we'll get to in a moment, we've all spoken about this prior to recording this episode, we all agree that there might be more to Agent Callus as far as his storyline and as far as his place in the Star Wars universe. Do you think that as his storyline progresses, that Zeb will face certain criticisms from other rebels for letting him go, if that comes to light? Or do you think...
Will he face future criticism? It depends on how Callus' story builds. That potential is definitely there. But as we see at the end of this episode, and this is why I'm hesitant to say Zeb will get criticism for this, because at the end of this episode, we end the episode with Callus back on an Imperial ship. He's limping through the halls. He bumps into Admiral Constantine, who just acknowledges him and walks on. And Callus limps to his quarters, goes in. He has the meteorite that Zeb got for him to keep him warm. We're still with him. And he sits down on his bed, lays it down, and there's nothing in the room. It's just his cot, his gear, and the rock. And he's just sitting there, and you see this, the face of somebody who is truly soul-searching their life at this point.
The rock keeping him warm.
Exactly.
In the old Imperial starship.
Hey!
Nothing. Oh. Would you like to say it?
No, you said it. I said it to him, so.
It's my credit. It works. It works. I liked it.
I mean, you had the same opportunity that I did to jump in. Go ahead, Aaron.
Yeah, sorry. I'm just... I just don't talk. That's my thing.
Right.
So, you know.
You're fine. You're fine. But we got... But I think from seeing how his time went with Zeb, and seeing that there is, it's not just, you know, people fighting. I mean, essentially, these aren't anarchists that he's fighting. These are people who legitimately have a beef, have lives, have something, have a past, have a story, have something that's truly happened in their life, and that they do have an ultimate goal. It's in that they believe, I think what it comes down to, they believe 100% that they're right in what they're doing. That kind of, and Callus, I think before this, was 100% dead set. He was doing the right thing. But after his interactions with Zeb, I see him, from the looks on his face and everything that happened on that starship, I believe now he's questioning whether or not he's on the, maybe possibly even questioning whether he's on the right side at this point. And which brings me to the end of the episode, because this is where it cuts. It cuts with Callus sitting on that bed in that self not self-loathing, but self-evaluation state of mind and expressions with that meteorite that is reminding him of his time with Zeb. And that's where it ends. And it leaves you with all these questions of what is the future hold for not just our heroes. What's the future hold for Kallus? Where could he go at this point? Does he stay Imperial? Cause that's all he knows. Does this experience change him to the point that he changes his opinion of how things are going? It's not just the Empire versus some rebels. Now it's there. Zeb has essentially put a face on the rebellion for Kallus.
Oh, that's a great way to put it.
That's exactly what's happened. He's put a face on it.
Giant hairy purple face.
Exactly. But that giant hairy purple face saved his life.
Exactly.
As we talked earlier, they were nemesis. They were mortal enemies. I mean, they hated each other.
There's nothing more of an existential crisis than realizing the person you've been fighting against for so long is actually a soul, you know?
Exactly. And not just soul. It got not only a soul, but a good person.
Yeah.
An honorable person. Because for so long, as you've seen these episodes go through, you see what the Imperials think of the rebellion, of the rebels. And you've seen it all through the original trilogy. You rebel scum. You see the rebel, even on the Princess on Lothal episode, where they're like, they take prisoners? They do that now? Yeah. What was the impression beforehand? That they just kill everybody?
Yeah.
That's putting a bad face on. That's basically whitewashing your reports there.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure it's not the first time the rebellion had captured somebody, which they really had captured her, but that was the appearance. That was forgiven. Or given, excuse me. So we definitely have a future for Kallus, and the book at this point is wide open for him. If he does continue with the Imperials, how can he justify it at this point? What is his thought process on that? If he flips to the rebellion, what role does he play? Does he just flat out leave the Imperial Navy and the Imperial Intelligence Network and go join the rebellion? Or does he become a highly placed informant for the rebellion? You know, like the type of informant who could, slip some Death Star plans to some rebels in a movie.
Were we not going to get something about like a show or a book or something about the Death Star plans?
I don't know. I heard something about that, but I never.
Somebody tweet me.
Exactly. Let us know. Email us. Tweet us. We don't know. Let us know. Remind us, because a lot of things there's so much stuff going on in the Star Wars universe right now. It is almost impossible to keep on top of with all the new releases and all the new books. And I am so far behind on my reading. I don't even want to go there right now.
My comic book reading, it's sad. Like, I try to talk to my friends who I talk about comic books with. And there are series that I haven't even started yet that came out months ago, So, yeah, I'm certainly with you on that.
Oh, yeah, and there are series that ended that I haven't even begun to read yet. Mm-hmm. That's happening all over the place.
But this, getting back to the episode, this episode did one of the things that I'm so proud of and I'm so excited about in the new era of Lucasfilm and in the new era of Star Wars under Kathleen Kennedy and the powers that be, is it is putting a face for us, the audience. It's putting a face on the Empire and even on, in the First Order, for those few of you that have seen The Force Awakens. it's really humanizing what we've always thought to be evil. And that's what this episode did, and that's what the new era of Lucasfilm is doing so great, so wonderfully.
Well, exactly. They've done a phenomenal job putting, I mean, as you said, humanizing the Empire. I mean, up to now, all we've had as a face of the Empire is Vader, the Emperor, the Stormtroopers, and Tarkin, and a few random admirals and generals here and there from Empires and Return of the Jedi. Not a lot of interaction there. It was just this big, bad, evil machine is what it's always been. But in this episode and through this episode, and as we see in, as you mentioned, The Force Awakens, we're seeing a more human element to the big, bad machine, which I got a feeling we're going to see a lot more of as the time goes on.
I agree.
So that, of course, ends The Honorable Ones, which was definitely a phenomenal. I heard you, Rachel. It's definitely a great episode. What are and each of you can take a moment. What are your final thoughts on this episode?
I want to bring up a part that I think I missed because I was chasing dogs. The part where Zeb and Kallus are in they're still in that, I guess, the cave type area under the surface. And Kallus tells Zeb that if he surrenders, you know, he would go on trial kind of thing.
Yeah, he would get a fair trial.
Yeah, he would get a fair trial. And so that just kind of blew my mind for a minute because I was like, is that the Imperial way? Like, they've been chasing these people down. They just, all they want to do is just hunt these people down. And then he says, well, you know, you would be given a fair trial. I just thought that was so interesting. And I felt like that was him, you know, going to see that Zeb had a fair trial, not, you know, the Empire giving him one.
Saying something like, you'll be given a fair trial, is not something you say to your nemesis, much like what Zeb said to Kallus.
Yeah, exactly.
It
was interesting to me, though.
Vowed to treat each other with the same fairness.
Right, and Kallus's was really early on. I mean, that was what was interesting. It wasn't the pure evil from the Empire. It was him talking, and I just liked that a lot.
Yeah, it was definitely an interesting point in the episode. I mean, we breezed right past that when we were doing a review and you were chasing the dogs. But he does mention that he would make sure Zeb got a fair trial if he surrendered. But at the same point, you know, what guarantees could Kallus honestly have given him? You know, his job is to capture them, not try them. We saw a premise of what an Imperial, I'm sure, what an Imperial trial would have looked like in the last episode, the last broadcasted episode of The Clone Wars, when they have Ahsoka on trial and she ultimately walks away from the Order, which is why she's around now. But we see that trial with Tarkin just hammering on Ahsoka, bringing in all these people, all these witnesses that supposedly were there, but weren't really the true witnesses of what had happened. And we see that happening. So we know probably he would want, it's almost, is Kallus delusional enough to believe that Zeb would get a fair trial? Or is it a delusion, or does he honestly truly think he can guarantee that fair trial?
I think he thinks that they'll actually get a fair trial.
I feel like he wants to believe that because he wants to believe that there's something at least a little good in what he's doing. Because
like he believes in what he's doing as much as, or at least until this episode. This episode was, I believe, his breaking point. But he believes in what he's doing as much as the rebels believe in what they're doing. So naturally he would believe that the powers that govern and the powers that discipline the quote unquote wrongdoers would treat them fairly and with a, you know, a just system of.
But let's take a look at what Callus knows as well. Callus, as he's told us in this episode, he knows things aren't kosher. Things don't go the way they're supposed to go. Lasat, he even said, it wasn't supposed to be a massacre. The Empire wanted to make an example, though. So he knows that it's not all, you know, nice, sunshiny legal system type games here. If you're dealing with a rebellion and you honestly want to bring these people to trial, you bring them to trial. You don't destroy the entire planet. You don't deal that way. So it almost, to me, it's almost one of his final delusions that he would actually believe that Zeb could get a fair trial. I believe he believes it wholeheartedly. But it's obvious, in my opinion, it's a flat knowing what he knows. It's a delusional belief. It's one of those, I know it probably won't happen, but I have to believe it will just to maintain my sanity.
Exactly. Yeah. It's like, have you read Lost Stars, Aaron?
I have not. It's on my Kindle to be read. Between Rebel seasons, I'm going to catch up on a lot of reading.
Oh yeah, it's fun how that happens. But yeah, there's in short, and to not spoil anything, the characters in Lost Stars go through this exact crisis that you're describing, and the sort of the delusions thereof, trying to figure out where the Empire stands and where it's this giant just machine, and like where the line to draw is on where the rebellion, which is in their eyes a terrorist cell, you know. And, you know, where to draw the line between punishing this terrorist cell and what is the actual right thing to do. So it's a thoroughly enjoyable read. Let me know when you start on it, for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I'll let you know. Definitely, I'll let you know when I finish that, because, I mean, there's a lot of books I still have to read.
There are.
Oh, yeah. I am so behind on my reading right now, so... But we will get it done, and when I'm done, I definitely will let you know, and we will, I'm sure that will open up new discussions for us as we go along, too.
We'll come to Orlando and go to Backlot and just have a burger and have a conversation about Lost Stars.
Yep. There we go. That's the plan right there. Let's do it. Let's do it. For me, though, as we continue on, Rachel, you brought that point up. Any other final thoughts about the episode, Rachel?
Zach's telling me to take the dog. He's holding her.
That's the final thought, huh?
Yeah. I loved how another thing that I loved, it was basically all symbolism, I feel like, but the warmth of the whole like family of the ghost. And then the coldness that Callus had when he got back to, whenever the Empire got him back or whatever. And just the fact that he had that little meteorite and it was still warm and he still had that kind of warmth from, I guess, Zeb. Am I making sense, Zeb?
Yeah, from being spared by Zeb.
Well, yeah, but like, it's like he lives such a cold life, and I feel like he didn't realize things were missing until he got back, and like no one would really even talk to him. No one even really cared what happened to him, and he just went to his room all alone. You know,
Exactly. I know exactly what you're saying there, because I'm sure from his vantage point he could see Zeb interacting with the ghost crew, how concerned they were, how happy they were to see him. They could see that. Callus could see that. And what wasn't shown in this episode, and if you actually go to StarWars.com and go through the episode guide and go through the trivia gallery, yeah, there's actually a trivia note in there on that scene where supposedly the Empire had given up on finding Kallus. It was actually a pirate or salvage crew that actually had located Kallus and returned him to the Empire.
Oh, man, that's such a huge... It's like, I mean, I understand with time restraints and everything like that, how they didn't have time to fit that in the episode.
I mean, they might could mention it later, like, you know, Kallus telling Zeb something like that. Like,
but they, just from where we're sitting, all we see is Kallus back on the ship, and you just assume, oh, the Empire found him. They did their duty, blah, blah.
Yeah.
When
they really didn't care.
When we actually find out, I'm really glad you said that, Aaron, because that opens up a world of possibilities, a whole can of fun.
A lot of
emotions. It really does, because it changes it adds more depth to the ending of the episode, because it's very focused. This is exactly what it says on StarWars.com under the trivia gallery for the Unwanted. It says the script would have specified that Agent Kallus was picked up by an independent traitor who intercepted the distress call, and that the Empire had expended all its allocated time to search for a missing officer, demonstrating the Empire's cold and human nature.
That is so gorgeous. That hurts my soul.
It's exactly what we've been talking about, especially what you brought up here at the end, Rachel, with Kallus returning back to his ship, and everything is so clean cut, cold, impersonal.
Yeah,
at this point,
happy that they accidentally found him.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, there's no. I mean, when he interacts with Admiral Constantine, Kallus stands there. He's like, Admiral, and Constantine just looks at him and goes, Agent Kallus, and just keeps walking. No stop. No, how you doing? No, how you feeling? Do you need anything?
How's that leg there, Tex?
Exactly. So definitely, there's. That inhuman feeling is there. And apparently there was going to be a lot more of it that was in the script that we just didn't get to see in the episode, which adds pulls back a whole new layer to this conversation. Because at this point, he knows what's missing and adds a whole new depth to his soul searching there at the end of the episode as it cuts to the credits. With him sitting on that bed with just that meteor rock.
Right.
So.
That's staggering.
Oh, yeah. It's deep. It's very deep. And that's one reason I love these shows is they put so much depth into them. And you just peel back one layer and find three more layers to peel through. It's very intense, very deep.
It's a never ending onion.
Exactly. Exactly. So, of course, we got Rachel's thoughts. Zach, what are your thoughts on the honorable one?
Excuse me. I've basically already summed it up in saying that this episode really captures the thing that I'm most impressed with about the new era of Lucasfilm, and that it's humanizing what we perceive as the enemy. If I was to take one thing away from the episode, it would just be that whole spiel that I gave you guys earlier about that. It's just such a difficult thing to do, and it's something that they're doing so flawlessly. And I think we're far, far from seeing the end of three-dimensional, quote-unquote, evil, you know?
Exactly. And it's since Disney took over and we got the new Lucasfilm, it definitely has been a roller coaster ride. And the series has definitely taken us probably on a huge ride in and of itself. This has been this was a very intense episode. I don't know if y'all remember a movie from the 80s, Enemy Mine. Louis Gossett Jr., one of the Quaid boys, Dennis Quaid, was that?
So that sounds like a Dennis.
Yeah, it was Dennis Quaid. It's where they crash on he's a human and Louis Gossett Jr. is an alien, and they're enemies at war, and they wind up crashing on a planet, and they have to depend on each other to survive. It reminded me a lot of this episode. Reminded me a lot of that. because they had to work together, overcome their hatred for each other to survive this planet, that they were abandoned. The only difference is we were abandoned a few days by these two on the ice planet, where in the movie it was several years they were by themselves, just the two of them.
What did you say the name of this movie was?
Enemy Mine.
Enemy Mine. Yeah, I've never seen it.
Oh, my parents talk about it a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a kind of a cult film back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Really good. If you get a chance, watch it. Very interesting. Good we'll movie. But this lined up this very similar storyline. What I liked about this episode most of all was the new side of Kallus that we were seeing. We in a season where we have been seeing, just a tremendous amount of growth in our heroes, to then just stop and get a tremendous amount of backstory and growth and essentially a villain is incredible. I love that they did that. I love the new side of Kallus that we've seen. Cause now every time I see him on the screen, I'm going to be scratching my head going, what is this man truly thinking and what is he truly feeling now?
Exactly.
Cause he's been the face of the enemy through these seasons. Yes, we've had the Inquisitors. Yes, we've had Vader. We had Tarkin for a few episodes, but he has been the face of the enemy through season one and through most of season two in ruthless pursuit of our heroes, where now we've got this human side to him that's been exposed, and that just opens up a whole world of speculation of what's to come for him. So definitely, I loved the episode. I thought it was well done. I thought David Aiello, who voices Kallus, and of course Steve Bloom, just did phenomenal job in their performances in the episode. I love the fact that the space field around Geonosis, where the construction field, was based, like most of the things in Rebels, was based on another Macquarie
piece
of art. Yep.
Good old
Ralph Macquarie. It wouldn't be Star Wars without him.
It really wouldn't.
Really would not.
I wonder if Ralph Macquarie designed Kallus's sideburns. I bet he did. I bet that was supposed to be a planet.
It's supposed to be a planet.
It's like a full-on.
If you think about it, it kind of looks like Starkiller Base. What? His sideburns kind of look like Starkiller Base with the trench out and you know what? Whatever. I'm right. Just go on. Keep talking. But it's. I never would have believed that one episode could provide enough Kallus to make him one of my favorite characters.
Right. Yeah.
Because he's been such a flat character, just a cog in the Imperial machine for so long. And then in one episode, completely redeemed. And totally redeem yourself.
Exactly. They completely fleshed him out in one episode.
Yep.
Almost to the extent that you can't help but like the guy now.
Exactly.
So it definitely is a fun episode there. Overall for me, definitely it's in one of my top 10 episodes for sure. Probably in my top 5, honestly.
Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, I'm really glad we were able to come on here and talk about this particular episode.
Right.
Oh, it was perfect. I mean, when I talked to you about coming on and got everything set, then when I found out what the episode was going to be about, I'm like, this could not have been more perfect.
Yay!
Written in the stars for this to have happened.
Yes.
So, I mean, overall, of course, we like to grade the episodes here on Rebels Reactions. Just like you had gotten in school, A, B, C, D. Rachel, if you had to grade the honorable ones,
what grade
would you give me?
No, I'm going
to
be very fair. I'm going to give it an A-.
Really?
Yes. Yes, because I'm hoping for my... Like, this is my favorite episode, but I'm hoping to see one soon between some certain characters that I've really been waiting on seeing that is my favorite. So,
so you're based on, you're basing your grade on future grades of other episodes.
I think so.
That doesn't seem entirely fair.
Well,
yeah, it seems a little off base there, Rachel. Well,
okay, I give it, this is why I give it an A minus. I give it an A minus because of Callus's breathing.
Callus's breathing gets him an A minus.
It just, yeah. I mean, the voice is great, and I know why he was breathing like he was. I mean, his leg
His
leg was broken. He was in an ice cave, but it got on my nerves a little.
Okay.
Right.
That's fair. That's fair.
It's just an A minus. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll.
Gotta justify it somehow. Just let her have it.
Yeah.
All right, Zach, how would you grade our Honorable Ones episode?
I would have given it an A+ were it not for what you said. And like I said, I completely understand the restraints of time and advertising and all that stuff that you have to deal with when it comes to TV. But I would have given it an A+ if it weren't for what you said about how he was discovered by a pirate. I feel like there's so much juice in that little factoid alone by itself that they could have found a way to sneak into that. They maybe could have. I mean, I get that it's hard.
I feel like they're going to sneak it in a later episode when Callus is. I feel like he's going to talk to Zeb at some point in time. And I feel like it might be one of those, like, Zeb is like, oh, you're wanting to help us? And he's like, they didn't even come looking for me.
I can see that. I could dig that.
That's what I feel like.
So, yeah, I say a solid A.
Okay.
So a 95. Oh, okay.
95.
solid A there. All right. I'm actually agreeing with both of you. I mean, this was a very deep episode when it comes to the growth of both characters, but mostly Callus. I love the fact that they grew Callus in the way they did. They fleshed him out more in 22 minutes than they did in every other episode beforehand.
Exactly.
Which is a tremendous amount of work to do in such a short time span. So more power to them for that. Their performances were great. Yeah, I'm going to have to go with Zach and definitely give it a solid A as well. Because it definitely met my expectations. for it exceeded it, honestly, with how they grew Callus. I always expect to have fun when Zeb's involved heavily in an episode, and I did. But Callus is the one that truly made this episode for me. The Callus's history, Callus's opening up, and seeing his vulnerability start to shine through definitely made this episode for me.
I would argue that Callus is actually the main protagonist in the entire episode because he's trying to get Zeb back to the Empire, and then he eventually fails and he goes back to the Empire and it's just cold and it's just not what he had. It's not the shining example of the utopia that he thought it was.
Definitely, I agree with that. You can definitely make that argument very easily for this episode.
And I love how for all of season two, they've been going with kind of we've talked on our show about it, how it's kind of a Lost style business model where you know, kind of a character a week, you know, each episode you talk about one character and you tell their story and you get deeply immersed in that character. And I love how they've done that all season. And then now they throw us a curveball and do that with Agent Callus.
Exactly. And one thing that you're right with the fleshing out of Callus, how many TV shows can you honestly sit back and look at where the villain was the focus of so much fleshing out in one episode? There are very few, if any, shows I think of that would take that much time to focus in on somebody like that, like Callus.
There's a sort of Buffy somewhere that did that, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, of course. It's Buffy.
Yeah.
But again, that's how many years ago? There's not a lot of shows that will focus in on an antagonist and put them in that protagonist spot for that much fleshing out as they did with Kallus. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. It opened up a new personality for him. It opened up a new view of him as not just the agent of the Empire, but as a person. And that's why I definitely loved the episode. Absolutely. And of course, if people want to contact you and listen to, of course, you have a phenomenal podcast yourself, Good Morning Empire. So if people want to listen to your show or just contact either one of you, tell us how we can get that done.
You can find our website on iTunes, Stitcher, you know, all the website. Usual. You can find our podcast. Our podcast on the website, and then as well as all the usual suspects, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, all of those fun things.
Yeah. And we're just Good Morning Empire and goodmorningempire.com. And then we're Wake Up Empire on Twitter. All that stuff.
Absolutely. We'll have those links in the show notes for you as well.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that might be smart.
Oh yeah, no. We'll have it all in the show notes. That way, people can find you if they want to. And definitely, I encourage it because, of course, we have Zach and Rachel with us tonight, but their other two co-hosts, Michelle and Jake. Definitely, I have not had the opportunity to meet them like I have Zach and Rachel because I know you two from Star Wars Weekends. We met at Star Wars Weekends, and
rest in peace.
I tell you, rest in peace, Star Wars Weekends. Go make me cry at the end of this episode. But we definitely had some good times there, and definitely we stayed in contact since. So I'm glad you were able to join us, and definitely I hope one day to meet Jake and Michelle as well. And that way I can say I know the whole crew.
Yep. Maybe eventually we'll be able to drag them to Orlando with this.
Yeah.
There you go. That'll work. Who knows? Maybe we got another celebration coming up at some point. Maybe we'll all make it there too. So
maybe, you know, the next American celebration will be in Orlando.
Oh, that's what my fingers are crossed for. So
that would be the best.
That would be.
It would be awesome. It would be right down the road. It would be great.
Well, it would be 8 hours from us, but we would be there.
Yeah, we make that drive so much. It's just like driving to, you know, the store.
Yeah.
So.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. Absolutely. It would be great. So, Lucasfilm, if you're listening, please. From us here at Rebels Reactions and from Good Morning Empire. Celebration in Orlando.
It's been a long time. 2012? No, 20.
Well, it's not really that long.
It wasn't 2012. It was.
Jake could tell us because he was there.
Yeah, he.
2011.
Yeah, let's say it was 2011.
Yeah.
It was 2011.
Yeah, he actually. Yeah, he talks about it all the time. He loved it, so he would definitely know.
Yeah.
Alrighty. So hopefully it'll be back, and eventually we'll all get together and again. And Zach, Rachel, I appreciate it so much y'all joining us tonight.
Thanks for having
for yeah. Great discussion on the Honorable Ones. If you want to contact them, they gave you their information. It'll be in the show notes. If you have questions or comments about the show, shoot me an email, rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. We're on Twitter at rebelsreactions. And of course, my email, of course, at aharris@coffeewithkenobi.com. Check out the website. We have a great series of blogs there. We have other great shows on our feed as well. Just hit it all up at coffeewithkenobi.com, and you'll find everybody there. And remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com, or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed at Coffee with Kenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.